From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's not a plan yet, more an outline, broad strokes, very Donald Trump in that way. But the president says he wants a big tax overhaul, and he wants it now. Spoke to it yesterday in Missouri, said, Congress, do not disappoint me. What does he want? What might we get? This hour, On Point, President Trump pushes now for a tax overhaul. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you on board? Do you see corporate tax cuts as the fuel to fire the economy to help you out? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. The president yesterday in Springfield, Missouri, at Lauren Cook Company, it's an old fan company there, gave the first of a series of speeches to push major tax changes, he hopes, before the end of the year. Here he was.
I want to work with Congress, Republicans and Democrats alike, on a plan that is pro-growth, pro-jobs, pro-worker, and pro-American.
Yeah, a plan that's pro-everybody. Said he wants to bring tax changes to revive prosperity that President Trump said has slipped away.
In recent years, millions of Americans have watched that prosperity slip away in the rear-view mirror, and it wasn't pleasant to watch. Especially for me, I would sit back, I was in business, and I could see what was happening. Wasn't good. If we want to renew our prosperity and to restore opportunity, then we must reduce the tax burden on our companies and on our workers.
And Congress, he said, and we're thinking maybe back to the health care battle, do not let me down.
So this is our once-in-a-generation opportunity to deliver real tax reform for everyday, hardworking Americans. And I am fully committed to working with Congress to get this job done. And I don't want to be disappointed by Congress. Do you understand me?
Do you understand me? Let's dive right in. Joining me from New York is Politico's chief economic correspondent, author of the Morning Money column, Ben White. Ben, welcome back to On Point.
Tom, good to be with you.
So it's broad strokes that he's sharing here, not a detailed plan. So give us the broad strokes. What's he talking about?
Well, the biggest thing that he's talking about in any specific terms is a cut in the corporate rate. The highest rate now is 35%. He wants to lower it to 15%. Much more vague in his speech yesterday was the idea that he also wants direct tax relief for middle-income Americans. And the administration has spoken before about lowering some of the marginal tax rates on individual taxpayers, all the way from the top to the bottom. But right now, what this speech focused on and what Congress is really most focused on is that corporate rate and lowering it. And the problem that Trump has, I think, is there's not a great clamor in America for corporations to pay lower taxes. You look at any polling on this issue and they actually think companies pay too much or pay too little in taxes right now. So he's trying to sell it as stimulative for the economy overall that will eventually trickle down to wages and average Americans if you lower the tax burden on corporations. Not sure that's the easiest case to make. It's certainly not an easy populist case to make.
Republicans have been eager to get to tax reform. A lot of support for that in the ranks on Capitol Hill. If the president has just broad strokes, and we heard him there sort of put the onus on Congress, who's doing the real planning and what's down in the details? Where does the actual planning for a tax overhaul stand? A tax overhaul is a big deal.
Yeah, it's really hard to do. And I think eventually we should be clear about terms here, tax reform versus tax cuts. And the bulk of the work right now is being done by congressional committees, the House Ways and Means Committee, the Senate Finance Committee, the leaders of those, along with administration officials, including Gary Cohn, the National Economic Council director, and Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary. They've for weeks and weeks been meeting to try to hash out details on a potential plan. And there are a lot of areas where they have not come to agreement. And we can get into any of those that you'd like. But the biggest lack of agreement is on whether we're doing tax reform, which would lower corporate rates but broaden the base and not add to the debt and the deficit, or we're just doing traditional Republican supply side tax cuts, which would slash the corporate rate, maybe slash some individual rates, and not worry if that creates more debt and deficit on the theory that it'll create more growth. So there are some fundamental ideological differences among the Republican negotiators right now, and they're not super close to having a consensus plan to put on the floor of Congress and pass. So there's a lot to go between where we are now and actually getting some sort of tax changes done.
That has to be a very big deal. I mean, Republicans have been so focused for so long on bringing down the debt, on avoiding more deficit spending. That seems like presumably Democrats will line up. I don't know. You tell me. Are they going to line up and oppose this like they did health care? Is he going to be in a situation where he needs every Republican vote again as he did on health care?
He probably is. And, you know, that's why you saw him in Missouri yesterday, home state of Claire McCaskill, a Democrat in a red state that Trump won. And he put direct pressure on her to get behind his tax plan. And you'll see more of that from the White House, Trump going to vulnerable states where Democratic senators are up for re-election in 2018 and might feel some pressure to go along with him on taxes so he doesn't wind up needing every single Republican vote. But at this point, Democrats are a pretty unified block of opposition to anything Trump wants to do, and particularly if they can paint this as a giveaway to corporations who don't really need it, and a cut in taxes for the wealthy, including the top marginal rate, eliminating the estate tax, repealing the alternative minimum tax, all things that Republicans have talked about doing, all that tend to benefit wealthier taxpayers. If Democrats can make that case, you're going to see a pretty uniform block of opposition to whatever Trump wants to do, which case he will need every Republican vote in the Senate. I think the House probably is easier to get a tax plan through. They could come to some agreement that mixes paid-for tax cuts versus unpaid-for tax cuts. And then you get to the Senate, where health care died and where tax reform or tax cuts could die if Trump can't make a good political sale on this. And it's as I said before, it's not that easy of a sale to make to cut taxes on corporations that are making record profits right now with the stock market quite high. It's not obvious that corporate America needs a giant tax cut.
Unpaid for tax cuts. It'll come to the House first. Where does Paul Ryan stand on that? Or as you put it, whether this is reform, which would change things but not increase the deficit, or a tax cut, which would increase the deficit. Where's Paul Ryan come down?
Yeah, well, he has for quite some time been a strong proponent of real fundamental tax reform that is deficit neutral. That was his initial position from the beginning. That was in his Better Way plan. And if you recall, he had a sort of unique way of trying to do that, which was a border adjustable tax that would have taxed imports and not exports and generated around $1 trillion in revenue over 10 years to help pay for reducing the corporate rate from 35 to 25. He only even attempted to go to 25%. So he very much ideologically wants real tax reform that is paid for and deficit neutral. I think he knows now that he's not going to get that. The border tax is dead, opposition from retailers and others who feared its impact on their bottom line. So now he's searching around for other ways, deductions to get rid of, to limit the impact of the deficit addition from tax cuts. So he's moved some way towards Trump's position, but fundamentally, ideologically, he would like this to be a base broadening reform that gets the overall rate down for corporations more competitive globally, but does not actually reduce the amount of revenue the government collects.
Democrats came out right away, of course, yesterday. Chuck Schumer had a conference call and said these tax changes shouldn't give a break to the rich. Here's the Senate minority leader.
If the president wants to use populism to sell his tax plan, he ought to consider actually putting his money where his mouth is, and putting forward a plan that puts the middle class, not the tough 1%, not the wealthy, not the powerful first.
Ben White, there with Politico, is there a consensus on where the benefit of this would fall, whether this would, as the president says, kickstart the economy and work for everybody, or whether it would move more money to the pockets, the deep pockets of the wealthiest Americans who have done darn well, as you say? I mean, corporations, record profits, record piles of cash that they've got there. You talked about eliminating the estate tax. I mean, that's what you can pass on inheritance. Are they asking to do that tax free? And your top percent of the country has got some pretty big fortunes piled up there.
Yeah, they do want to eliminate it. Republicans view that as double taxation, that money has already been taxed once. It shouldn't be taxed again when it's passed on. But to the consensus question, there is general economic consensus in the economic literature and data that if you do a big corporate tax cuts, the beneficiaries mainly will be shareholders who will see stock prices rise because companies are more profitable, and then those who get dividends from those corporations who send extra money back to shareholders.
Yep.
There will be some benefit to labor, and this is where you get into the big debate among economists now. There are economists who will argue that the brunt of corporate taxation is actually borne by labor. I think that's a minority view, continues to be a minority view, but that will be the Republican argument, and that is Trump's argument. It, you can think of it sort of as a bank shot tax reform for the middle class and the working class, that if you cut taxes on corporations, they will then invest more, create more jobs, and increase wages. Problem with that is companies already have a ton of cash sitting around that they're not mm-hmm. using. Mm-hmm. So why does adding to that pile of cash necessarily mean that all of a sudden they're going to start investing in wages and new plants and equipment and manufacturing? So I think that's why the economic data and most economists would argue that this would be more beneficial for shareholders and for those who receive dividends.
A bunch of that corporate cash is stacked overseas. If they mix it up so they could bring that home, maybe tax-free, would that get them out of the bind of increasing the deficit?
No, I don't think it would, because it would have some offsetting impact, certainly none if it's tax-free. If they do a tax repatriation at a one-time lower rate, say mm-hmm. 10% or some other rate, you would get a percentage of that $2 trillion coming back overseas, and some of that would go into the Treasury's coffers.
But it's
would
a one-time pop, I guess.
It's a one-time pop and not a long-term solution if you are, in fact, trying to do permanent tax cuts. So no, it would not solve the problem.
Ben White is chief economic correspondent for Politico, writes the Morning Money column there. He's with us. We're going to hear from Lynn Berman, Steve Moore coming up later in this hour from Senator John Danforth in Missouri, who's been very critical, big Republican, very critical of this president. You can join us. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron, knowing that incredible ingredients make incredible meals. They follow the highest quality standards and deliver recipes along with just the right amount of ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. New recipes are created each week, so you can customize your recipes each week. Check out this week's menu and get 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/onpoint. You don't have to spend time at the grocery store. Make great meals in under 40 minutes. There's no commitment, so pick what you want at blueapron.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Donald Trump's call for changes in American tax law, what Trump and the GOP may push for, what different options would mean, who wins here. You can join us this hour. Are you up for changing American tax law? Have you wrestled with it? Have you had enough? Do you want to see something different? Are you on board with cutting the corporate income tax? And where would you take the knife to taxes if that's what you're into, or tax more heavily? What's the loophole you'd like to close? What's the tax break you're afraid of losing? Do you think we can do all this without increasing the deficit? Where's the benefit likely to fall? Ben White is with us, Politico's chief economic correspondent, joining us today from New York. A year ago, the president was on the campaign trail still. He was at the Detroit Economic Club, said his tax policies would be unlike any seen since Ronald Reagan.
These reforms will offer the biggest tax revolution since the Reagan tax reform, which unleashed years of continued economic growth and job creation.
And job creation. Well, he'd like it to look that way. House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Kevin Brady was asked on CNBC a couple weeks ago, can the president do it by the end of the year, given the failed attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare? Here's Congressman Brady.
Yes, I do. And here's why. One, I don't think any lawmaker believes it helps their reelection chance to miss the opportunity to fix this broken tax code. And there's so many things different in tax reform than in health care. First, while America is divided about the benefits of Obamacare, there's no one defending the status quo of this broken, complex, ugly tax code.
And will the pressure be on Republicans to get it done this time? Yes, it will. Here's Republican Senator from Utah, Mike Lee, on Fox Business yesterday.
I think we will, because we have to. Look, the American people elected us expecting us to repeal Obamacare and bring about tax reform. We haven't repealed Obamacare. If we don't get tax reform done, we're dead. We might as well fold up our tent and go home.
Okay, there are the stakes. It's on a fast track with the president. Hopes so anyway, but taxes can be awfully complicated and major, major interests at stake here. I want to look at all of that. Joining us now from Washington, Stephen Moore. He's economist at the Heritage Foundation, economic advisor to Donald Trump's 2016 campaign, was founder of the Club for Growth. Steve Moore, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
And Leonard Berman joins us from Washington, co-founder of the Tax Policy Center there out of the Brookings Institution. Len Berman, welcome back to On Point. Wonderful to have you.
Hi, Tom.
Steve, first to you. What do you see in the broad strokes of what the president has outlined here? Does it look, I mean, I guess you're Club for Growth, so you're more in the tax cut camp than in the tax reform deficit neutral camp. Does it look like he's headed for the tax cut avenue to you? And does it look like something this Congress can pass?
Yeah, I think it will be a tax cut, Tom. And I think that's partly because, you know, when you do tax reform, the last time we really cleaned out the stables of the tax system was back in 1986 under Reagan. That was a little over 30 years ago. And back then, Tom, what was different then from today is, you know, that was in no small part driven by Democrats. People like Bill Bradley and Dick Gephardt, even Ted Kennedy, all recognized that because, you know, we had so many loopholes in the tax system that this kind of grand bargain of cutting tax rates to make the economy and the tax system more efficient, but getting rid of loopholes was the deal. And by the way, just to give you a sense of how times have changed, back in 1986, the Tax Reform Act, when it passed the United States Senate, which cut the highest income tax rate to 28%, that passed 97-3.
Wow.
You know, think about
things
that.
Have really changed.
You know, compared to where we are today. Mm-hmm. So Democrats today are both ideologically opposed. Most Democrats want to raise tax rates. They don't want to lower them. Chuck Schumer has made this point that we're not interested in tax reform anymore. We want higher tax rates. And so that grand bargain doesn't exist anymore. I think it's really difficult for Republicans to start talking about, well, we're going to trim the mortgage deduction, we're going to get rid of the state and local deduction, we're going to get rid of the interest deduction. Those are all popular things, even, you know, charitable. It's just too difficult, in my opinion, for Republicans to try to slay those dragons without any Democratic support. And that means that the default position then is you have to do what Reagan did in 1981 and just do a tax cut. And how big that will be is yet to be determined. Larry Kudlow and I, we advised Trump on taxes during the campaign. We still talk to the White House all the time. Our recommending is just do three things. Cut the business tax rate to somewhere between 15% and 20%. Do a doubling of the standard deduction, which gives about $1,500 to families in terms of a tax cut, and do that repatriation that you were talking about. Just do those three things. We estimate that would cost about $3 trillion, but if we can raise the growth rate by one percentage point over the next decade, which I think we can, that would essentially pay for the tax cut.
Len Berman, does that sound like a trio of steps that this Congress could take? And if they should take those steps, would that bring the promised payout for the middle class and American labor?
I don't know what this Congress will do. I think the policy would be disastrous. We're already looking at $10 trillion of deficits over the next decade. The economy is near full employment right now. The unemployment rate's 4.5%. So it's a really bad time to put in place a giant tax cut, which would likely just be inflationary, or force the Fed to push up interest rates, which could push us into a recession. And, you know, when you look at the long-term challenges facing this country, they're demographic, the working population is aging, and the things we might do to add to that population, allowing more immigrants, clearly isn't going to happen anytime soon. And healthcare costs that the government is committed for. And cutting taxes without dealing with the commitments that we've made to aging senior citizens just seems like a recipe for disaster.
Is Steve Moore right when he says, well, look, let's pump up economic growth and the rest of it will take care of itself?
I think it would have the opposite effect on economic growth. The additional deficits would eventually put pressure on interest rates. And in the short term, they would create the problems I mentioned, just creating inflationary pressure or causing the Fed to push up interest rates to prevent inflation. So I don't think it would be a boost for economic growth. I think tax reform is a great idea. I came to Washington to work on Ronald Reagan's tax reform. Lowering tax rates in a revenue-neutral way, making the tax code more neutral so that it doesn't favor certain industries over others or certain activities over others, those are good things. But just cutting taxes right now doesn't make sense to me as a policy.
Ben White, referee a little bit here. Steve Moore says, let's do these at least these three simple things and we'll get more growth. The president suggesting the same yesterday in Missouri. Len Berman saying, no, he's afraid that you'd actually cut into growth given the overall revenue and fiscal outlook. Is there a consensus on this, Ben, or are we just flying in clouds?
Yeah, no, there's not a consensus. I mean, you could certainly make the argument that you would have a short-term stimulative impact on growth and that Steve would be right about that. And then Len would be right about the longer-term impact on deficits, debt, and interest rates. I mean, I think the fundamental problem we have here is, you know, from a policy standpoint, we're absolutely ripe for 1986 style reform, which is, you know, and there is agreement that the U.S. corporate tax code is a terrible mess and that the statutory rate is too high, but many companies pay a rate that's too low given the loopholes they can use. And that if you could do this base broadening exercise that gets the rate down to somewhere between 15 and 20 or 20 to 22, make it more competitive for U.S. companies to create new jobs here and new industries here and not try to invert and go overseas. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, not increase the deficit or
invert.
The debt.
This is where they actually move their formal headquarters abroad.
Overseas, yeah, in order to have a lower tax rate. So the policy environment is ripe for 86-style reform. So is the backdrop of the economy, which is corporate profits are good, stock prices are good, growth is not great, but it's modest, and the unemployment rate is low. So it's not obvious you need a huge stimulative tax cut. But the political environment does not allow for 1986-style reform. It may only allow for, as Steve said, 1981-style across-the-board tax cuts. So we just have this mismatch of the policy requirements and the political reality. And at this moment, I don't see a great solution to that problem.
Steve Moore, I want to bring that to you. But Len, first on this issue, Steve Moore points out in 1986, you pushed through the Reagan tax reforms 97-3. That's a lot of Democrats voting yay at that time. Why isn't that possible now? As Ben says, you look around, it looks like not a bad time to do real tax reform.
I was there and it took a lot of work to get to that. The first version of tax reform that came to a vote in the House, it wasn't even clear it was going to pass. It's actually not even clear that it did pass. The Republicans were planning on calling for a voice vote because a number of them didn't like raising capital gains tax rates and some other provisions were in the bill. And Tip O'Neill, who was the Democratic Speaker at the time, looked around the chamber and, you know, somebody called a vote and the whip and deputy whip in the Republican caucus were in the restroom or something. So they nobody was there who could call for a vote. So he said, okay, all in favor, say aye. And there was like 10 people said, aye. And all opposed, nay. There was a roar of nays. And he said, in the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it.
I get it. That's detailed history, really detailed. But the outcome ultimately was 97-3, and now we're here in 50-50 land, or you know something like that.
But the things we had in 86 was we had presidential leadership. President Reagan, first of all, used his staff to produce two very great blueprints, detailed blueprints for tax reform. The Treasury Department produced a list of bullet points for this version. Second, the president was actively engaged, and he made phone calls, and he talked to Democrats and Republicans and convinced them that it was in their interest to support the policy. And he gave a great speech when he needed to, and he could rally support. Those things aren't happening now. Basically, the president seems to be saying, here are things I want to do, and I'm going to leave it to Congress to work it out, and if it doesn't work, I'll blame them. Which doesn't seem like a great basis to get even the Republicans in Congress to sign on to his plan, much less the Democrats.
Steve Moore, you and Larry Kudlow have been talking with the president ever since campaign time. But is the Trump administration is the White House actually doing the work to get this done? You know, Len describes a couple of years of work that went into Reagan's 86 victory.
Yeah, no, I think Len has it right that, you know, a lot of years went into that 86 Act. I was there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a miracle that it happened because you had all the lobbyists and special interest groups that were against it. But it was something good for America. I'd love to see that happen again. I'm a flat tax guy. I would get rid of every loophole, every carve out, every special interest provision and get the rates as low as you possibly could. That's an efficient system. But look, I mean, I think Len danced around the issue here. The issue is not Democrats don't want to cut tax rates today. I mean, the grand bargain then was let's cut tax rates and get – but Democrats today don't believe lower tax rates matter. I mean, you just heard Len and Ben say, you know, it's just not going to help the economy to get tax rates lower. I think that's completely wrong. I think our corporate tax system is clearly leading to companies leaving the country. It's funny, Tom. I did an interview with Irish Public Radio last night.
Okay.
And they're freaked out about this. You know why? Because Ireland, they don't want the United States to cut our corporate tax rate.
A lot of American companies have gone there with their inversions.
Yeah, you go to Dublin and every other company you see is an American company. So they're like, please stop this from happening because they understand that a lot of those companies will come back to the United States. And we have companies in China. We have companies in Mexico. We have companies in Canada. We're losing.
But Steve, let me ask you one last point. We're at
40%. The rest of the world's at 20% to 25%. That just doesn't work anymore.
I mean, though the effective rate is much lower here, where people actually pay, but it's a patchwork. I know it's awkward.
That's true.
But let me ask you this.
Even our effective rate is higher than almost any other country in the world. And by the way, this is what's wrong with the corporate tax system, though. We have the highest tax rates in the world, and we don't even raise that much money. And I mean, my gosh, I actually think we could get the rate to zero, and it wouldn't even cost the economy that much revenue because you get so much growth from
it. But when you come with tax cuts, not reform, I mean, maybe some of the Democrats' caution is deserved because you look back to the 80s, and our deficits under Reagan and after did soar. They soared. This was a big deal to Republicans for a long time. Is it not now? Does it give you no pause?
Well, it's true the deficits increased, and we also had one of the biggest economic booms in American history. I mean, we put 20 million more people to work. We had 4% growth. And, you know, look.
I mean, we had it again in the 90s, but we didn't have the same, you know, soaring deficits.
But in the 90s, we had the biggest cuts in government spending since the end of World War II. We cut the capital gains tax. We had, you know, we had a balanced budget because of spending reductions. My point is this, that there's this assumption that Ben and Len are making that somehow this growth – look, it is true. The economy was decelerating at the end of the Obama era. It grew at 1.6%. The good news is under Trump –
at the very
so
end.
Far,
I mean, it had something like a 2-point – I forget what it was,
it was
average
2%
overall.
For the 8 years, and at the end, it was decelerating. We went at 1%. 1.6% growth last year. We've had this big Trump bounce. You know, we got 3% GDP for the second quarter. This quarter, the GDP is growing at 3.5%. That didn't happen by accident. It's because we've slammed the brakes on regulations, and there's this anticipation of these tax cuts coming. I actually think if they don't pass the tax cut, it's going to hurt the stock market a lot, and it's going to hurt growth.
Ben, what about the Trump bounce here? Are you popping the champagne corks?
I'm not. And two pieces. I think Steve is mischaracterizing my position on the impact that tax reform could have on the economy. I mean, I'm in fundamental agreement with him that the corporate rate is too high and it's a joke and it needs to be junked and redone. I just think, you know, there is validity to the argument that if you do it in a way that does add to deficits and debt, that's not a great idea and not necessarily long-term bullish for growth. In terms of the Trump economy versus the Obama economy, I think it's too soon to pop the champagne corks, and maybe the trend now in this year is a little bit faster than it was. But we saw quarters of 5% growth and 3+% growth under Obama, only to see it slow down again to 1 to 2%. So, you know, great if there is this optimism over tax cuts and less regulation that's leading to sustainable, faster growth. I mean, that would be terrific. I just think it's too soon to say that we're actually in a faster growth trajectory. Is there a risk to the stock market and to business confidence if tax reform or tax cuts fails? I think that's true, that there is, that you would see stock prices fall and you would see investor and business confidence fall. So it would be good to get something done here. I'm just not sure the thing that get done is going to be what could be most beneficial to the economy.
Quick call before the break. Bonnie in Clive, Iowa. Bonnie, you're on the air. We've just got a minute, but thank you for calling, Bonnie.
Hi, Tom. I used to be an executive, a corporate executive, and now I'm a small business owner.
Okay.
And having been an executive, I can tell you that I believe we need to do some reduction in corporate tax to be competitive worldwide.
Yep.
I'm in agreement with that. But dropping it to 15%, I can tell you that I would just get a bigger bonus. We would just pay our executives more. It never dropped down to the working class. It never dropped down to employees.
What about all those companies moving their headquarters formerly abroad, Bonnie? Would it bring them home, stop them from going?
That's what I said. I said we need to be more, I think we need to be more, to be more competitive from a corporate standpoint, but I don't think we need to drop it to 15%. Like you say, corporations right now have huge fluctuations, huge cash reserves. Are you seeing that in reflecting in more salaries for their, or higher salaries for their
No,
staff?
No, I have to say no, we are not. Bonnie, I appreciate you bringing your experience to the table. We'll talk about it after a short break here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking about President Donald Trump's call for changes in American tax law, what Trump and the GOP may push for, what different options would mean, who wins in all this, and what about the American economy there. Stephen Moore is with us from the Heritage Foundation, Len Berman from the Tax Policy Center, Ben White from Politico, chief economic correspondent there. You can join us as well. In a few minutes, we're going to talk with former U.S. Senator from Missouri, where the president made his speech yesterday, John Danforth, big figure in Missouri politics, Republican circles, and nationally for a long time. Recently out with an op-ed in the Washington Post saying President Trump is not a Republican. Republicans need to distance themselves from this president. We'll ask the senator, former senator, about that. We've got calls waiting here, but let me come first to you, Steve. You heard Bonnie there, a corporate executive, now in small business, but says, look, it's just this won't make American labor better off because it's just going to be more higher salaries for the C-suite.
Well, you know, first of all, the intention of this tax cut, what we want to have happen, and we'll see whether it works or mm-hmm. not, is we want the companies to reinvest the money in the business, right? We don't want the, you know, the CEOs to take the money out and go to the Bahamas.
But they're loaded right now. So right. What will change? If they've right. You so, know, they got cash yeah. stacked to the moon
exactly.
out there right now.
So this is where the U.S. economy broke down. This is where I disagree with Len and Ben a little bit.
Okay.
What happened, the reason the economy didn't grow very much under Obama, we had the weakest recovery ever, in my opinion, is because, look, companies were profitable. There's no question about it. We had a big stock market rally. No question about that. Companies really hunkered down and become lean and efficient. What they didn't do in this recovery that they normally do is they normally reinvest the profits in the business. And that didn't happen in this recovery. And one reason it didn't was because, and I'd ask CEOs, I was at the Wall Street Journal all the time, I'd ask them, yeah. why aren't you reinvesting? And they'd say, we're afraid of Washington. We're afraid of the regulations. We're afraid of Obamacare. We're afraid of the tax increases. We feel like we're under assault. I think if you take away those barriers, you're going to see companies reinvest. If you look at the latest GDP report that I mentioned, one of the biggest increases, which is a very good news, is businesses are starting to reinvest again. And we want that money plowed back into the company. I'd love to hear from people listening to the show. If you're a small business owner and you get this tax cut, because this is also for small businesses too,
yep.
what will you do with the money? Will you reinvest it? That's what we want.
Okay, the question's on the table. Let's go to Ed in Versailles, Kentucky. Ed, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'm a retired corporate executive. I spent 40 years in the most competitive business in America, and I'm a Republican. And I think the concept that cutting taxes on corporations or individuals, especially on corporations, is going to increase their investment is not right. I worked with hundreds of businessmen, and never once in 40 years did I hear these guys say, well, I'm not going to make any more money because I would have to pay taxes on it. They all tried to maximize their profit, and then they obviously took advantage of every tax loophole they could find. Now, we have a very complex tax structure that needs to
you
be
sure
cleaned
do.
Up.
Yep.
But the idea that an individual like my son says, I could be a doctor, but I'd have to pay too much taxes, so I'd rather be a tax.
So what would you do, Ed? What
contrary to human nature.
What would you do? You've been in business. You're looking at the economy. You're a Republican. What would you do?
Well, I think the reason that their jobs are going overseas is because there are no barriers. There's no penalty to corporations taking the jobs overseas. We need trade programs that make it advantageous to corporations to keep jobs in America.
Would you cut taxes? Where would you cut if you were going to?
Our structure does not do that.
Would you cut taxes? And if you would, where would you cut them?
I would cut them on the middle class people who are going to take that money and then go buy a new truck or put an addition on their house or go on vacation. The people that are going to spend the money, putting the money in corporate coffers, they've got the money now. You've said it exactly right. If they were going to invest, they've got plenty of money to invest. And at 1% interest rate, you know, we could do all kinds of investments, but you need the consumer buying in order to make it work. And that's where I'd put the tax cuts.
I appreciate your call, Ed. Lynn Berman, the assertion here is that we would get a bump in economic growth and we would get better wages and better jobs for lots of Americans. You don't seem to buy that. What would you do? Where would you take the knife or the reform effort here?
Well, I mean, revenue neutral business tax reform could cut tax rates and could reduce the disparities between different industries and different businesses. And I think that would be a good thing. I think it wouldn't produce a huge bump to economic growth, but it would reduce government's role in companies' decisions. I think it would make sense to make the tax system a lot simpler. A lot of people just don't understand how it works. It's a black box to them, and they think it's unfair. There are a lot of things you could do to simplify the code. I think actually you should think about over time raising more revenue in a way that doesn't take an undue toll on the economy, because those spending pressures are going to add to the debt, and that's going to produce a big drag on economic growth. So those are the things I would focus on.
Critics have said, Lynn, that this is going to be, or you heard Chuck Schumer, he's saying this isn't going to help the regular guy and gal. This is going to go to the rich. Do you buy that or not?
Well, looking at what Donald Trump has said so far, the vast majority of the proposals he's made would benefit very, very high-income people. Now, we estimate that the tax cut provisions, which he's been specific about, would lower the average tax bill for somebody in the top 0.1%, super rich people, by about $1.4 million a year, or 20% of their income. His Treasury Secretary has said they're not going to cut taxes on high-income people, but he hasn't talked about any ways that they would actually roll back the very, very large tax cuts on the very wealthy.
Ben, what about material changes that regular filers might see? The mortgage deduction, is that on the block here? Could that go away? The deduction for state and local taxes, could that go away?
The mortgage interest deduction is not going to go away entirely, and Trump has been pretty specific in saying that they're going to leave that alone. There has been talk among the negotiators about reducing the cap on what you can deduct, the size of a mortgage you can deduct from $1 million to $500,000. I'm not even sure that that's going to happen. As Steve said before, once you start talking about reducing these deductions, A, you get taxpayers really mad, and B, you get big industries like the real estate industry really angry. So no. And then on state and local, I think that's a possibility that's still on the table as something that could get eliminated on the theory that it benefits mostly middle to upper middle taxpayers, and they don't necessarily need the relief. But, you know, I think you're last caller hit on a critical point here, and Steve hasn't really addressed this as much. Why, if we are focusing on tax relief, we're not focusing more on the demand side? Because I talked to executives too, and they say we don't invest partly because of Washington, partly because we don't think there are people there to buy our products. So if you have, you know, taxpayers in the middle income area that you can put more money in their pockets to spend more money on goods, then maybe you get those companies to spend a bit more of their cash pile. And to their credit, the administration is talking about increasing the standard deduction. So there is some focus on the demand side and on average taxpayers, but maybe there should be more focus there.
Steve Moore, we've got former Senator John Danforth about to come on here. We just got half a minute. The president was very broad stroke yesterday. You talked with the White House. When are we going to see actual details on what is coming here?
Hopefully very soon. Look, I think that, you know, the clock is ticking here. I agree with, I think you played a clip from one of the senators.
Mike Lee in Utah says, get it done or we're dead, he said.
I agree with him on that. I mean, look, the Republicans struck out, just as a political matter, Republicans struck out on health care reform. If they don't get a tax cut done this year, I think they're going to lose the House and Senate. So I think there's a political and economic imperative for Republicans to get this done, which means they better get a tax plan out there that we can see pretty soon.
Show us the beef. Show us what it might be. Stephen Moore with the Heritage Foundation. Thanks very much for being with us today, Steve.
Thank you.
Leonard Berman at the Tax Policy Center at the Brookings Institution. Len, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Ben White, Chief Economic Correspondent for Politico. Terrific to have you with us. Thanks so much for coming on, Ben.
Tom, it was always a pleasure. Thank you.
In a moment, we'll talk with former Republican Senator John Danforth about Donald Trump, Missouri politics, and the state of the nation. This is On Point. John Danforth served three terms as U.S. Senator from Missouri from 1976 to 1995. An ordained Episcopal priest, he officiated Ronald Reagan's funeral in 2000. Dick Cheney edged him out for the vice presidential spot on the Republican presidential ticket. He served briefly as United States Ambassador to the United Nations for the Bush administration. Last week, he wrote an op-ed published in the Washington Post calling President Trump the most divisive president in our history. Said Trump is not a Republican and talked about what he called the real reason why. You can link to Senator Danforth's essay at our website, onpointradio.org, and he joins us now. Senator John Danforth, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
Can you please give us the heart of your assertion here about President Trump and the Republican Party?
It doesn't have anything to do with particular legislation or his attacks on other Republicans, although, you know, there's good reason to be concerned about some of that, but it really has to do with a major theme of the Trump presidency and of Donald Trump, and that is divisiveness of setting one group against another, treating major blocks of our country as though they don't really belong here. And that is the opposite of what the Republican Party has been. The Republican Party is the party of Lincoln. It is the party of the union, of trying to keep things together. And Donald Trump is the most, as I said, the most divisive president in history. And I think it's important for Republicans to distance themselves from Trump and not create the impression that Trump is the Republican Party. He isn't. It's very important, in my view, to have a strong Republican Party, a strong conservative party in America. But if it becomes tainted with divisiveness and hatefulness, then the party really doesn't have much of a future.
You wrote he stands in opposition to the founding principle of our party, the GOP, that is, that of a united country. You said it isn't a matter of occasional asides. Trump is always eager to tell people that they don't belong here, whether it's Mexicans, Muslims, transgender people, or another group. His message is, you are not one of us. The opposite of E Pluribus Unum, you wrote, and when he has the opportunity to unite Americans, to inspire us, you wrote, to call out the most hateful among us, the KKK and the neo-Nazis, he refuses, you wrote. What kind of response are you getting from fellow Republicans, Senator Danforth? You called for them to disassociate themselves from President Trump, but we have not seen much of that.
It's been a mixed response. A lot of people have said to me, communicated with me one way or another, that they are very appreciative of the piece. They agree with it wholeheartedly. They've been waiting for somebody to say this. And then there are people who are true believers in Donald Trump, and they resent it. You know, they're standing by him through thick or thin.
How do you explain this division within the ranks of the GOP over this president, Senator Danforth?
As I said in the piece, I don't see Trump as a Republican because he's departed from the founding principle of the Republican Party. On the other hand, there are a lot of people in America who welcome him, and you know, people have written books on the subject of why a lot of people feel sort of disenfranchised or mistreated or disrespected. Treated as the deplorables and so on. And so I think there are people who think, well, Donald Trump is a bully, but he's our bully. And that accounts for a lot of support that he's getting. But if you look at the polls, something like a third of the American people approve of Donald Trump. And as far as a political party is concerned, you're not going to get very far if all you have is a third of the public.
You wrote, Republicans must disassociate ourselves from Trump.
What would that look like? What would constitute disassociating, Republicans disassociating themselves from the president?
I think it depends on where the Republican is. In other words, I don't expect people in elective politics to be very out front verbally. But I think people like me who are not in elective politics, it's easier for us to verbalize opposition to Trump. But I think for people in elective politics, it's to model an approach to America that's very different than Trump's approach. In other words, it's not so much what you say, but who you are and what you do and how you act, and making it obvious that what you are is very different from what Donald Trump is.
Is that enough, that kind of modeling? I mean, you point to some pretty extreme, as you describe them, circumstances of the president going with divisiveness. You call him the most divisive president in our history. Is it enough just to model, not to be explicit? If Republicans go down that road, does Donald Trump just redefine the party around them? And maybe it's not the party you say it is or wasn't. Maybe that's history. Maybe it's his now.
It's a matter of making it clear that Trump is not like us.
How do you do that without saying so?
It can be done verbally, and it can be done by who you are and how you act and how you behave and how you relate to various people. And whether you are the kind of person who is a unifying person and you reach out to the very kinds of people whom Trump is busily attacking. So I don't think it's all words, and I think if all it were words, we wouldn't get very far. So I think it's a combination of what people say, and that's more likely to come from people who are not in elective office now, and the way people act and reach out to others.
If Republicans don't disassociate themselves from the president, the thing you call for, what happens here over the next 3 years or seven?
Well, that's really the that to me is very, very worrisome, because let's say that in the next election, just insofar as a Republican or a conservative or a moderate is concerned, supposing that in 3.5 years the choice is between Donald Trump, the Republican nominee, and say Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders as the Democratic nominee, that would be, for many of us, just an absolutely awful choice that we would have to make.
Senator Danforth, we're out of time right there, and I regret it, but we really appreciate your coming on and your time with us today. Former Republican Senator from Missouri, John Danforth, thanks very much for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.